This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Dave Brown, and this is a podcast version of AMI's Morning Show, now with Dave Brown. Catch the live broadcasts weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI. Every couple of days, we connect with some of our AMI colleagues across the country to find out what's going on in their neck of the woods. Ryan Dillahanty is a content development specialist, and he's here for the Atlantic Regional Report. And funnily enough, if you're going to give a report on the Atlantic, you should be near the Atlantic Ocean. So Ryan Dillahanty joins us from Halifax, Nova Scotia. Hey, good morning, Ryan.
Hey, good to be here. It's a bit of a scorcher in Halifax, but I'm enjoying your new summer jams on the show. I like the new music.
Thank you. That was a project of myself and Daniel Penamondo. So we're very happy to hear that you're feeling the vibes. You know, we were just saying at the top of the hour, Ryan, that the people who live by the ocean have a different conception of a heat wave than those of us in sort of the middle of the country. So the Humidex in Vancouver today is 30 degrees. For them, that's like panic-inducing in terms of heat. What is it that you guys in Halifax will consider a heat wave?
Oh, that's a good question. I find air conditioning is not as prevalent around these parts, and so that probably factors in that we're around 23 right now. It's pretty humid. I closed all my windows to try and keep the heat out. I don't know if that's the right strategy or not. So I think this is kind of my peak of comfort. Now I've got the lights on in my little home studio, and it's pretty hot.
Yeah, that is roughly the technique you've got to use. You've got to keep the windows open all night, and then you got to close them during the day, keep the cold air in. What you can also do is if you take a bunch of ice from your freezer, put it into a bowl, and then put the bowl below a fan. As the ice evaporates, it'll blow the cold air around your place.
All right. I'll have to get a second fan just for the ice bowl.
Ryan, I've lived a life in heat waves with no air conditioning for years and years. So I know an adaptive trick or two to keep myself a little bit cooler than you'd expect. Okay, let's jump into this. Enough dilly-dallying about keeping cool. Let's get into the Atlantic Regional Reports. And Ryan, you want to let us know about a new program called Atlantic Read, the Read Atlantic program. So what can you tell us in sort of broad strokes about this program?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a partnership between the Atlantic Publishers Marketing Association and the New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, and Halifax Public Libraries. Just began last week when they launched a new collection of 100 Atlantic-published ebooks that are now more accessible than ever. So it runs from June 15th till July 15th with the 100 ebooks available to all library users with no holds or wait lists. All of them will include accessibility features that make the ebooks accessible for library users with print disabilities. And this is the first time that a collection of local ebooks this size has been made available for simultaneous reading by an unlimited number of library patrons across the region. So it includes 65 English books, 35 French, and 16 from different Atlantic publishers, and they span multiple genres, including fiction, short stories, history, biography, memoirs, local interest, poetry, young adult, and children's books as well. So quite a variety in the collection.
So we'll unpack some of that piece by piece, but first and foremost, for folks who are not in Atlantic Canada, is there some jealousy here? Can we not get copies of these books?
I've been hearing you should be able to access them anywhere in the country. So library users in the Atlantic region can borrow them from their local libraries, their regular channels. Often people use Overdrive and the Libby app here in Nova Scotia and New Brunswick. And for French readers in New Brunswick, there's a prenumerique.ca. So prenumerique.ca and their corresponding app. And since some accessibility features are still in development for these platforms, the full collection will also be available on the platforms of the National Network for Equitable Library Access, or NELS, and the Center for Equitable Library Access, or CELA. So that's where people should be able to access them anywhere in the country.
So let's drill down a little bit further here about some of those accessibility features. How are some of these books going to be made more accessible for those users who have print disabilities?
It's really at the heart of the project. They wanted accessibility features baked in. And so these allow for assistive technologies to read and navigate the text, such as image descriptions and reflowable formats, and allow for changes to elements like color and font size. And then there's, again, more information on NELS and the CELA sites. And it was made possible in part with funding from the Department of Canadian Heritage's Accessible Digital Books Program, which encourages the Canadian book industry to increase the availability of born accessible Canadian author digital books. So hopefully this is just the start of much more to come.
Yeah, very cool project. I know we spoke with Karen McKay from the Center for Equitable Library Access about this last week as well. So very cool to see this starting to take hold, and a great idea to get some books out there in folks' hands. And Ryan, you had a couple recommendations. What are some of the titles we should be keeping our eyes and ears open for?
Yeah, there are quite a few that I'm going to have to work into my reading list this summer, maybe bump the books that I'm neglecting out of the queue. You can find the full list at atlanticbooks.ca/100ebooks. Really something for everybody with the variety. So, of course, I have to give a little shout out to Robert Mercer's book, Mrs. Beaton's Question, which inspired our Tales from the Halifax School for the Blind podcast. There's Amazing Black Atlantic Canadians by Lindsay Ruck, Before the Parade, A History of Halifax's Gay, Lesbian, and Bisexual Communities from 1972 to 1984 by Rebecca Rose, a book I actually bought for my stepfather, I think, this past Christmas, Black Cop, My 36 Years in the Police Work, and My Career-Ending Experiences with Official Racism by Calvin Lawrence. And so that's a really fascinating book as well. I personally have collected some poetry books, sort of 50s, 60s Canadian poets and some musicians I like that have released them. So one I'm a huge fan of, I was really excited to see the collected poems of Alden Nolan, a poet from New Brunswick, a really interesting figure there. In Toronto, there's a book that's set called Confessions of a Teenage Drag King by Marcus Hardwood Jones. Also, quite a few books from Indigenous authors like How We Go Home, Voices from Indigenous North America, Powwow Summer, A Long Journey, Residential Schools in Labrador and Newfoundland. One book that's actually getting or a story that's getting some attention, as there's a feature film debuting at the Tribeca Film Festival in New York shortly about Peace by Chocolate. And so the book of the same name documents the Haddad family's remarkable journey from Syria to Nova Scotia. And as I said, is also being turned into a film. So that one will get a lot more attention, I'm sure. There's some other books like Identifying as an Arab in Canada, A Century of Immigration History. For fans of AMI TV Sightseers, there's Screech, Ghost Stories from Old Newfoundland, and a few books for hockey fans as well. So a book on PK Subban, Fighting Racism to Become a Hockey Superstar and Role Model for Athletes of Color, and a children's book, Sid the Kid and the Dryer, about our own Mr. Crosby from the NHL. So in addition to that, there's some award-winning books like Dirty Birds by Morgan Murray, Acadian Driftwood by Tyler LeBlanc, many others. So again, unlimited circulation until July 15th, but you should still be able to borrow the titles, maybe have to wait in the line if they're popular after that. And you can find out everything at atlanticbooks.ca/100ebooks.
Wow, between June 21st and July 15th, that's a lot of reading to catch up on with Ryan Delahanty. That reading list is extensive. I'm glad you were not my grade 9 English teacher, Ryan. That would have been a lot to handle. Also, you
We dismiss you for the summer, we've got some reading for you to do.
You also would have been younger than me, so that also would have been confounding in my grade 9 English class. But let's not get caught up in the time-space continuum here. Ryan, of course, it's the start of summer, which means that it's patio season. And the last time you were on the show, you told us about a new accessible app from the Peach Research Unit at Dalhousie University. Now they've got a new project hoping to highlight accessible summer patios in Halifax. So what are the deets we need to know here?
This was something that Makiko Terashima from the Peach Group shared on our Bill 59 accessibility group on Facebook. Anybody in Halifax or Nova Scotia interested in the happenings of accessibility, it's a great place to network and just see what everybody kind of in the scene is sharing. And so now that restrictions are lifting and patios are increasing their capacity, restaurants are open for in-person dining, the Peach Research Unit is teaming up with Rick Hansen Foundation Accessibility Certification Professional, Michelle Mahoney, and The Coast, our free local paper in Halifax, and they're wanting to promote accessible patios in Halifax. So they're asking members of the public to nominate their favorite, most accessible restaurants, cafes, pubs, ice cream joints, etc., with patios or any outdoor space where people can enjoy their food, and tell Peach briefly what makes them accessible. And the Coast will then be gathering all that information and publishing an accessible patio map for people to reference throughout the summer. So you can gather your tips, what works, what's good for accessibility, what may not be, and send them to peach@dal.ca, and then keep an eye on thecoast.ca for the map when it launches later in the summer.
Now, that's an easy email address to remember, peach@dal.ca. And Ryan, while we're in the world of patios, let's say you and I were making a wish list of our favorite patios, our favorite features that we like to see, with, of course, accessibility in mind. I'm curious, what are some of the things that come to mind for you? I think about a few of my favorite patios over the years. There was a bar in Montreal called Le Saint-Élisabeth, which had this incredible patio in the back because it was a courtyard around three taller buildings. So there was no view, but it was very intimate, and there was a lot of ivy up on the walls of the taller buildings, and it always had a cool vibe. There was also Le Saint-Sulpice, which was just like a gargantuan patio, just sprawling all over the place, lots of room to get together with friends or family or whatnot. I also think about a patio that I used to love in Ottawa called the Lieutenant's Pump, where it was all covered, but you could still sort of look out onto Elgin Street. So I'm not big, I don't need a big view, Ryan. I like a little bit of comfort, maybe a little bit of shade or a bit of a closed space. What about you? What are the features you look for in a patio when you're about to have a burger and a beer on a summer day?
Yeah, I think we're pretty much in line. There's a couple that are right on the water here. They don't tend to be my favorites. Often there's not much shade. And then we had one, it's kind of bounced between a couple different restaurants, but they've got a beautiful back courtyard. And I always like that again. Not much scenery, but it's comfortable. You're not going to overheat. Sometimes a nice rooftop can do that as well, get you a nice breeze. Yeah, we've got a few good ones in town. Definitely, you know, having some good music for me helps a lot. I'm hypercritical when it comes to that. So if they can set a good mood, that goes a long way for me. If I'm comfortable, good food, maybe not too crowded. So yeah, those are definitely the priorities. And, you know, for accessibility, the big thing that, you know, has been unfortunate, there was a human rights case around it, was that some of our restaurants would launch an accessible patio for the summer, but would not offer any sort of accessible washroom facilities,
right.
No place
that's
for
right.
people to wash their hands. So that's a big deal too, to have accessible hand wash stations, accessible washrooms nearby. And it's, you know, it shouldn't be insurmountable for most of these businesses with the amount of business that they do.
And it all goes back to something we talked about with Thea Curdy right at the top of the show today about inclusive, accessible beaches. It's not just about one mat that gets you onto the beach. You have to be thinking about inclusion and accessibility in the whole experience. So, Ryan, that was rightly identified there about making sure there's accessible washrooms if you're going to label your patio as accessible. Ryan, always a blast catching up with you. Have yourself a nice couple of weeks, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Thank you.
You've been listening to Now with Dave Brown. Hit the subscribe button on any podcast platform and leave us a rating and a review.